together. They're about championships. They're molded into that. Kevin Durant, I mean, he left his team. He left Westbrook, and then you look at Westbrook, he's just like Draymond, the same attitude. Yeah. And Kevin had a problem with him. Now it's a problem with Draymond. So to me, I think that if they don't figure this out, I mean, if KD ain't committing, I mean, trading. You can get two or three good players and you still got Cousins. That's my opinion.
Rob, I appreciate your opinion. And I can feel the concern in his voice. I mean, he's clearly a Warrior fan. Robin Sanbruno, diehard. He knows his stuff. And I think he brought up a good point, and it was about respect. And I think that that is a big – anybody we work with, anyone we date, anyone we marry, whatever, there's a baseline of respect that we expect from that individual. And I do think that there are times when Draymond doesn't respect Durant sufficiently. And I think it's unfair for Draymond to do that. I also can understand where there's an elephant in the room where you don't know what your situation is. And this is the part, this is the subtle nuance that I think people are missing. I think Draymond fears he's going to end up being a Harrison Barnes type, not Harrison Barnes specifically, but being left in the wind or pushed aside in the way Bogut and Harrison Barnes were. And I understand the contributions to the organization. You cannot compare. Draymond, he's on a pedestal and a level so much higher than those other two guys. I'm just saying, from a business standpoint, the way the organization quickly shed themselves of those two players without regard for what they had contributed to. And I do think that that worries Draymond. And I understand that. He feels he built this. He feels he's a part of the draft process, picking guys, setting the tone, bringing the physicality, doing all the dirty work and getting none of the appreciation for it nationally. I totally understand where that resentment would come into play. I also understand where the resentment of Joe Lacob's going to bow down to everything KD wants. KD hasn't even committed that he wants to be here. Like, I get all of that. And I think that a lot of people can see it from multiple angles. But I would like to see people understand it from Joe Lacob's perspective. Because at the end of the day, they are building a $2 billion stadium. And they need to fill that sucker. And we just assume that they're going to make money hand over fist. Ask the Niners how that's working out for them. Ask them how it's like uprooting the fan base from an area that's been thriving and supporting that team through everything. And then moving into an area that you deem to be more valuable, that you deem to be able to get you a higher price point on a ticket. This is one of those rare occasions where I can see every single point of view. And a part of me sides with KD. And then another side of me totally sides with Draymond. They're in a really tough spot. The Warriors are in a really, really, really tough spot. And I think you saw it on Bob Myers' face. I think you saw it on Steve Kerr's face. I think you heard it in the comments he made with Damon Bruce tonight. And we went through that. We dissected all of the conversations and the talking points. But I also think there's a financial element to this. And people say, oh, it's not about money. It's always about money. It's always about money. It's about money for Joe Lacob. It's about money for KD long-term, not just in the NBA realm. It's about Draymond getting the money here. He wants to get all that money and stay here. And I get that. He knows he can get the money elsewhere, but the money in Minnesota, in Charlotte, in, you know, City X, Atlanta, wherever they would throw a ton of money at him, it's not equivalent to the value and the money here, even if the numbers are the same. Even if the numbers are the same. And then, if you're going to bank on Draymond, regardless, if you're going to bank on Draymond, can you trust his body's going to hold up? They put so much money into the Iguodala basket. The dude is shot. When was the last time he played 20 or more minutes in back-to-back nights? Crickets. Crickets. I mean, when was the last time that guy suited up back-to-back nights when we needed him, and he was available and ready and contributed? I don't know. I don't know. And then people want to just trade KD. No, you don't trade one of the best players in the game. If he walks in free agency, that, for me, if I'm Joe Lacob, that is a proposition I'm willing to roll the dice on. Keep him happy while also trying to re-sign him. And if he walks, he walks. That happens. That happens. And if it does, you know what? You freed up a ton of cap space. Bob Myers, I'm looking at you. Make some better decisions on the roster. And I love Alphonso McKinney. He's been brilliant. He's been brilliant. The Patrick McCaw draft pick hasn't really worked out. Kevon Looney's been really good. Really, really good. I think Damian Jones is a work in progress, I would say. I don't think I'm ready to say one way or the other. I like Damian Jones' raw ability. I want to see more of him this year. I think there's something to work with there. But I'm looking at Jacob Evans, and I'm sorry. Jacob Evans is a bad pick right now, today. And it's early. It's really, really early. He has time to recover. That's a bad pick. Omri Caspi, bad pick. Re-signing Sean Livingston, bad money. That's bad money. And between Iggy and Livingston, that's $25-plus million that you could have allocated to Trevor Ariza, to a handful of different guys. Here's a guy that I wanted the Warriors to get, Julius Randle. Now, is he as good as Draymond? No. He gives me a lot of the same elements he does. A lot of the same elements. And he signed, I think, a $9 million deal 1 year with an option for another. There's a lot of guys out there that do two or three of the things Draymond does, but nobody in the game does all of the things he does. And everybody, oh, the doomsday scenarios. Oh, my gosh. The 925 on the Chilton Auto Body text line. Stop it with the doomsday conversation. They had two bad games. Steph was out. Oh, my God, this is ridiculous. Yeah, and it's the reality. Did you see Kevin Durant in both of the postgame pressers? Did he look like a dude who was ready to move on? And then that's where I'm disappointed in Kevin. Kevin, grow up, dude. Tell your brother to stop tweeting. Somebody, try. Hit your mom up and say, stop tweeting, mom. Because everything you tweet out, everyone's going to dissect. And I love Mary Babers Green. She's the best. She's hilarious. Everybody wants to follow her. I'm actually followed by her on Twitter, which is cool. Yeah. It's pretty cool. But it's like, come on, guys, everybody, stop. Stop tweeting. Stop posting. KD, stop putting you in the Lucifer video on Instagram, going to an Oracle Arena. Just everybody stop. Oh, here we go. The 925. Did you not see Andre Iguodala dunk from the dotted line 2 games ago? He scored 14 points, and he played 30-plus minutes that night. That was this week. Great. Again, do it back-to-back nights, Iggy. He can't. He physically can't do it. And when I needed him the most last year, in Game 6 and Game 7 in the Western Conference Finals, after he barely played all regular season, where was Andre Iguodala? Oh, that's right, a DNP, did not play. Why? Because he was hurt. And I love the guy, and everybody last year, oh, Iguodala gets paid, not for the 82 regular season games, for the playoffs. He wasn't there for the playoffs. Real quick, before we go to the break here, we're going to talk 49ers on the other side. Larry, in San Francisco, what do you got on Draymond? Step right up, no waiting.
Hey, my friend, man, it's good to talk to you, dude. But you know what? We made Draymond Green expendable with all our talk about. He plays with passion. He plays with fire. He's the heart and soul of this team. We made him expendable. We made him a liability. You know, we just need to stop the passion and the fire he plays with. Just play basketball, bro.
We don't need you to
teach Kevin Durant how to play basketball. We don't need you to tell Curry what he's doing wrong. We don't need you to be a coach. We got Steve Kerr. We just need you to be the average, good defensive player that you are.
Because, in true fact, if
you put him on the necklace, if you put him on the Knicks, he's an average player. If you put him on the Clippers, he's an average player.
I hear you. I hear you, Larry, and I agree with you. I really appreciate your call. I'm up against the clock here. Call back anytime. I hear you, and I agree with you. I think on another team, he's not as valuable. He's not looked at the same way. I still think he'd be able to do more, you know, on his own statistics, individually. I think he'd score more if he had to. I think he would hold the ball more if he had to. But I also think part of the passion is what makes him who he is. I just wish he would be able to be discerning enough at this age, 28, mature enough to realize when and where and how to pull it back a little every now and then. On the other side, we're going to talk 49ers. We're going to change it up. Everybody is Draymond KD drama'd out. I understand it. We're going to switch gears. We're going to talk 49ers. I got Joe Fan from the 49ers.com, senior reporter. Stay with us. 95.7 The Game, The Butcher Shop. Here again, 957 The Game.
The Butcher Shop continues on 95.7 The Game. Here's Joe Shasky.
I love that. Man, I need that guy to follow me around everywhere. Like when I'm walking into the deli to order my sandwich. Now here's Joe Shasky, and he wants a turkey sandwich. Like, that's what I need. I need that guy everywhere. He's at Sears, and he's buying a new oven for the kitchen. That'd be awesome. All right, we've been talking Warriors all night. We're going to have Joe Fan here at 9:30 come in. He's the senior reporter for 49ers.com. I want to dig in on the Niners because I got Warrior fatigue, and I know the fan bases on both sides of the Bay do as well. And I know it's been a tough football season. I mean, the Raiders are so bad, and the Niners are right there with them. They're both pathetic. They're pathetic. One is slightly less pathetic than the other. But right now, my Niners, they are basically in line for the number two pick overall. And we're going to do a little draft talk for people that are into the draft. I know we're 2 weeks away from December, so we're almost in bowl season. We're going to have Tommy Call. He writes here for 95.7 The Game. New voice in the, you know, the Bay Area pantheon of the media. And he's got a couple of decisions, or I guess suggestions, for where the Niners and Raiders and who they might be looking for and targeting. But when we're talking about the Niners, I went to the game the other night, Monday Night Football, against the New York Giants. One of the rivals going back way, 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 way back. And, you know, it's really, really, really frustrating. It's really frustrating for 49er fans who packed that place, Levi's, and I feel like it's starting to grow a soul. I do. I really do. I think that there is a real old-school contingent of 49er fans that, because of the inexpensive tickets, I think because of how bad the team is doing, there's like only the diehards are really showing up. And there's a lot of Fairweather fans still going because of where it's located and just because of the dynamics of Levi's, but I really like the vibe that Levi's has for these last few weeks. And I think it started with the Ram game. Felt like it started in the fourth quarter of the Arizona game, even though they lost by two touchdowns. But the Ram game, I really felt it, that LASF thing. And then for the Battle of Bay, it was just an incredible vibe out there. And I think it continued in the New York Giant game on Monday Night Football. But there's just some things, man, with this coaching staff, I just don't understand. Cassius Marsh, a defensive end who's not that athletic, time and time again in crucial situations, out in space covering dynamic Saquon Barkley. What are we doing? And we had Dave Lombardi on last night, and I love Dave. He does a great job covering the team, but he's like, oh, well, you know, when you're not getting pass rush, you're going to have to mix things up and you send different guys on blitz packages. And that means a DN's going to have to cover. I don't ever remember during Vic Fangio's time, Justin Smith ever dropping into coverage. You know why? Because Justin Smith could not drop into coverage. He was passing, rushing the passer, stuffing the run. That's what he did. Cassius Marsh should be stuffing the run, rushing the passer. He's not one-tenth the player Justin Smith was. But my point is, part of coaching is putting people in advantageous situations so that they can succeed. And I just feel like time and time again, when I'm watching the 49ers, the scheme, the fit, the calls that are being made on defense, they don't fit the personnel. And it drives me bonkers. They get into the red zone, the New York Giants offense, and we stay in zone for the 10,000th time, and there's one guy on the perimeter, you got a man up, no matter where he is on the field, and it's Odell Beckham Jr. And somehow, inside the red zone, Odell Beckham Jr. gets wide open in zone coverage, and it's an easy touchdown. And I'm just like, what are we doing? How does that happen? And I like Kyle Shanahan. I really, really like Kyle Shanahan. I want to believe in him, but he needs to make a change. And I get it. They don't have enough players, blah, blah, blah. They don't have any pass rush. Oh, the pass rush. The defense can't be functional without the right pass rush. You're that scheme dependent that because you don't have an outside linebacker who can rush the passer, that just everything I'm not supposed to criticize. I'm not supposed to learn anything about this defensive coordinator. That's ridiculous to me. Who's having a great season outside of Richard Sherman on this defense? It ain't DeForest Buckner. He's having an okay season. It definitely isn't Solomon Thomas, who was on the sidelines in the final drive doing these like practice hand maneuvers. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. It was so weird. It'd be like a guy watching Kevin Durant take free throws in the closing minute of a game, doing practice free throws with no ball on the sideline. That's what Solomon Thomas was doing with his hands. It was so weird. I thought he was like trying out for the Karate Kid behind the coaching staff. Your number three pick can't get on the field? Really? You just whiffed on that pick, and every other pick in the first round at that draft has been a home run. He is by far and away the worst pick in that entire first round. Even Mike Williams, who was hurt all last year, has made some plays for the Chargers. I was going to call them the San Diego Football Chargers, but no, they're the Los Angeles Chargers of Carson. And Nick Mullins has had his moments. I like Nick Mullins. I'm rooting for him, but he's clearly a backup. C.J. Beathard, I don't need to see any more C.J. Beathard. I know what C.J. Beathard, he's not that good. I really like Matt Breida. Really like his toughness. I don't know if he could survive a full season as the number one dude. And I think in today's NFL, you see it with Austin Eckler and Melvin Gordon, and even Todd Gurley takes a breather here and there. You need multiple backs. They need a power back. And I think that's one of the hidden nuances of a lot of these fourth quarter fades. You know, they've had so many leads in the fourth quarter and they can't seal the deal. They don't have a power run game. When they need to get certain yardage in certain situations in the fourth quarter, they can't get the tough yards. And I'm not blaming Breida. I don't think it's specifically him. I think it's a combination of things. I think it's the functionality of the offense, the lack of a true number one that threatens safeties and forces them to play them honest. But, you know, it's the 49ers drive me bonkers on the defensive side of the ball. I like what the offense is doing. I love what George Kittle's doing. George Kittle, and I was the first person to point this out 3 weeks ago. George Kittle, and yeah, that was me patting myself on the back right there. George Kittle is on pace to break the tight end record for receiving yards in a 49er uniform. And we've had some great tight ends. And I know because of how many great players they had around him, Brent Jones was never going to eclipse 1,500 yards or 1,300 yards in a season because they spread the ball around. They had so many really, really, really good players. But in 3 minutes, we got Joe Fan. 3 minutes, Joe Fan, 49ers.com. But Kittle is on pace to shatter Mr. Parks, Dave Parks, who was a tight end in the 60s for the 49ers. Ask your grandpa about him. My grandpa told me about him at Kezar. He was balling. He had, I think, 1,300 yards, and he was a very dynamic chess piece in that particular era. But Kittle is on pace to break that record. And that's a big, in my opinion, that's a big accomplishment. This is a fifth-round pick who I completely overlooked at the tight end spot. He's given us a dynamic playmaker that you can utilize, not just in the pass game, but he's been unbelievable setting the edge in the run game. And he's just been a really, really good inline blocker. I think he has a great feel for the game. His toughness is just without question. He's got great hands. I really, really, really love George Kittle. And you know what? Let's just get to him early. Let's do it. Give me Joe Fan 49ers.com senior reporter. Oh, Joey. How you doing,
what's up,
Mr. Fan?
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you? Are you out of this smoke, man? Do you have any family that's being affected? I hope you're doing well. I hope everyone's safe. I hope you're inside. And oh yeah, you can slow that music down. Sorry, I started to go. I thought you were gonna start busting out into a rap song right there, Joe Fan. Are you good tonight, man, on this Friday night?
I'm doing just fine, man. You know, I heard you talking about George Kittle a little bit. I thought you were describing me for a second. All of a sudden, I was talking about George Kittle.
Joe Fan, senior reporter, 49ers.com. You did a really cool video this week. You do this, like, Toyota thing. It's really cool. People hop in your car, and you got to do, like, a little fun, introspective with some of the players, and you get them out of their element singing songs. What did you do this week with Joe Staley?
I mean, I just drove the car, and then I let Joe Staley and Mike McGlinchey do what Joe Staley and Mike McGlinchey do best, and those two are a couple of the craziest characters in the NFL. I mean, it's kind of like herding cats trying to get any sort of organization, so I don't even try. I just drive the car, and I let them do the rest, and you saw the result. It's pretty entertaining stuff.
Yeah. You know what was funny is you're almost the size of Staley height-wise, dude. You're sneaky tall over there, bro.
Well, sneaky tall, yeah. I mean, that's what they put in my scouting report, man. That's what makes shape down to the draft.
Well, I'm sneaky small, so we'll make a good yin-yang, dude. We got Joe Fan, 49ers.com. Hey, so I was at the game against the New York Giants, and there's been so much spoken and written and talked about Levi Stadium, and I want to dig in on there because I know everyone's complaining about the roster. They're complaining about the defenses. Oh, you can't make any assessments because they have no pass rush. I want to make an assessment on Levi Stadium. No one has been more harsh about the stadium than myself. And I have had so much fun going to the stadium over the last 2 months. I feel like there is a really cool, old school, diehard vibe that is starting to be built at Levi's. Are you starting to feel the soul of this franchise come back at that stadium, especially in the fourth quarter of these games?
I think you do for sure. I mean, it was loud. I mean, you saw, the false start on the Giants' final drive. I mean, that's due in large part to the fans. I mean, and again, like, everyone loves to point out MVC. It's such an easy, low-hanging fruit, so to speak. And I think we've talked about this before, and I don't think you can truly judge a venue until it hosts a playoff game or a meaningful game late in the season, just because, you know, again, I'm a huge Mariners fan. I'm from Seattle. And if you went to, a Mariners game in September when the team is 30 games under 500 out of the playoffs, you're like, wow, this terrible vibe, bad venue, doesn't have a good atmosphere. It's like, well, yeah, duh, there's 30 games out of a playoff spot. And so I just think it's the criticism of Levi's Stadium, you know, some warranted, some, you know, completely out of left field, in my opinion. I mean, and everyone's going to have their own opinion. I just think until this team has returned to the playoff picture, I don't think you're going to truly know, but I think you made a great point. I mean, these games, from the Raiders game to the Monday night game, I mean, fans have been energized. It was loud. It's got a great atmosphere. You can see potential. You can see potential of what is possible, you know, should this team return, hopefully, in the next year or two to the playoff picture and meaningful football following the turn of the new year.
Totally agree. And I'm starting to see a lot of old school faces out there, a lot of new fans. I mean, you're going to have a good mix out there, and I really like the direction that the stadium's going in, and I think that the organization is starting to really get it when it comes to connecting with the fans. That statue of Dwight, that statue of Joe is a big first step forward, and I want to nominate to Joe Fan, senior reporter, 49ers.com, who we have on right now. I think that the next statue, and this has been my suggestion for about a month now, I think the next statue should be Bill Walsh, and it should be right up the stairs going up where that Joe Montana and Dwight Clark statue is, overlooking the field. I want Bill Walsh either, you know, surveying the field like he's watching the organization and have his hand on his jaw with the headset on, you know, that look of like stoically thinking. That's what I want to see. And then you can call that side of the field the Bill Walsh side or the Bill Walsh end zone. Then on the opposite end, give me Eddie DeBartolo overlooking that particular corridor, that particular end zone. What do you think about those statue suggestions?
Amazing ideas. I'll run out of the flagpole, man. I genuinely, those are are really cool ideas. And I think the cool thing about the stadium is, you know, when it was opened, it was a little bit of a blank canvas. And I know that frustrated some people. And I mean, I can tell you very honestly, I mean, all the way from, you know, my boss to Al Guido, the president of the company, I mean, everyone listens to fan feedback. And, you know, they take those comments earnestly. And, you know, I know that the fans were really wanting the place to feel more like the home of the 49ers as opposed to just this kind of immaculate new venue. They wanted to be it. Yes, this is a great venue, but it needs to feel like the home of the San Francisco 49ers. And so, you know, they've put up some signage. The statues were a big thing. And it's just going to be an evolving process. I think they're not going to rush into anything, which I think is the right thing to do. You know, make sure it's all well thought out, make sure it's what fans want, and execute it as things go.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I would love to get in a room with Al Guido. He'd probably hate me, but I'd love to get in a room with him, sit down and explain some of my statue ideas and just how to connect with the old school fan base and make it feel like our home. And it is. It's starting to feel like our home. I'm really proud of the 49er fan base, and I'm really happy with what the organization has done. And I don't mean that just because I got you on, Joe Fan, senior reporter of the 49ers. I mean that sincerely. It's been a lot of fun this year. Now, Matt Breida on the field. I've been so impressed with Matt Breida's vision, his patience, his cutback ability. We saw a guy in Saquon Barkley who was one of the top picks in the draft, and he looks really good. He's a load. Different player than Matt Breida. Matt Breida, though, looks every bit the dynamic playmaker that Saquon Barkley looks, and he was undrafted. How great of a find has he been?
Yeah, fantastic find. And so much of this year was which year one players are going to take that big step forward in year two. And Matt Breida is an obvious choice, George Kittle being the other one. But I think Matt Breida has been fantastic. I think, you know, he's still getting used to the physicality of the game in terms of, you know, having his body make it through the wear and tear of the season. That's something, you know, you hope will continue to improve as years go on. But he's been fantastic. He's really improved in the passing game, which I think is a huge thing, especially with Derek McKinnon is going to be your primary pass-catching back, a guy who really – isn't just a guy who can catch passes out of the backfield, but a guy you design plays around in terms of getting him mismatches and creating big plays in the passing game. So you, when you lose that, there's a void. And Matt Breida has really stepped up to where, you know, I wouldn't say he's Jerick McKinnon, but he's been very, very good. That touchdown catch against the Giants, full extension grab in the end zone. I mean, really impressive. And I don't think that he makes that play a year ago. And so you've seen a lot of growth from him. Obviously, the toughness there, the way he's fought through knee and ankle injuries for this team. He's back. He's as healthy as he's been all year now. Took advantage of the long week after the Raiders game. He'll get another long weekend this weekend just to see him full go again. But, yeah, I mean, he's been fantastic. I think everything 49ers fans could have hoped for, and then some probably.
You know, I completely agree. And I'm watching this team, and I know people are frustrated with the win-loss column, but there are some things that you can really pluck from this that are unbelievable positives moving forward. And one of them is Richard Sherman. And this isn't a direct comparison, but he so reminds me of Dwight Hicks. Dwight Hicks was the senior defensive back when they drafted all of these rookies for the 81 season. Ronnie Lott, Eric Wright, Carlton Williamson. And he was the guy that was the senior statesman who led that defense. And he taught these guys how to be professionals. I want Richard Sherman to be a 49er for life. I know we can't look into the future too far, but what has his impact been? Not just as a player, because he's been unbelievable as a shirt-tackling DB, as a guy in coverage, but what has he done behind the scenes, on the bench, in the sidelines, as a professional to teach these guys, even in a lost season, this is how to be a 49er, this is how to be an NFL player?
Well, I think he's someone who can add perspective, and he's a trusted voice. I think when he speaks, people listen, whether it's coaches, whether it's other players, whether it's media, whether it's fans. I think his opinion is just valid because he's been through so much. He's got such a resume to him to where, you know, again, he's got credibility. And so I think that adds value, and I think perspective is so important. And, you know, I mean, things are never as bad as they seem. Things are never as good as they seem. I truly do believe that. And you look at 2-8, man, so frustrating. And what's, you know, the most frustrating is that you can pinpoint exactly what's gone wrong. So you can look at that either way. I mean, you look at those five games, truly five games. Again, we've talked about this, Joe. Five games, not just could have won, but should have won. When you look at the Los Angeles Chargers, Arizona times two, Green Bay, and then New York on Monday night. Those are five games you should have won. So let's say you just take three of them. All of a sudden, you're 5-5 into the bye week and still very much in this thing. And so you can look at it from as many angles as you want, and I'm not going to tell anyone how they should look at this. You can decide how full your glass is, but I think you look at it, and my outlook is it's not a new problem every week where something keeps popping up, right? This mm-hmm. doesn't feel that far off, even with the injuries and all the frustrations. You just got to find a way to close, and I think that's the frustration for everybody. But again, the margin's small in the NFL. I think everyone knows. I think Richard Sherman knows that, which is why, you know, he's keeping things moving forward. But I'm really eager to see what happens these last 6 weeks of the season.
Yeah, you make a great point there. And then two guys that I go back with this team so far, and one of the best drafts this Niner team has ever had was 2007. You plucked Patrick Willis, you plucked Joe Staley, and Joe's still plugging away. Patrick should and hopefully will be in the Hall of Fame someday, but they didn't have the impact as rookies right away, day one impact starters, the way Mike McGlinchey and Fred Warner have. Now, who knows where their career is going to end up, but as far as impact in 1 year from day one to where we are now, I mean, how great is it that they identified these two guys, put them in a position to succeed, and now you're seeing the PFF ratings, you're seeing the team trust them. I think Fred's got the green dot on his helmet. I mean, how incredible is it that they've got two legitimate high-end starters in one draft?
I mean, it's huge. You combine just the capacity, the mental capacity to be able to do the job with the physical ability is pretty special for a rookie. I mean, you look at Fred Warner, a guy who's really running the defense. I mean, he's had the green dot since day one. And so that speaks volumes to what he's capable of mentally, but also you've seen the playmaking, right? Mm-hmm. You've seen him, you know, the big run stuff on third down in the red zone against Saquon Barkley. You see Mike McGlinchey running 50 yards downfield, paving the way for Raheem Mostert. I think both of them have been extremely impressive, really by all accounts. And I think that goes to show you just how complete players they are. And, you know, good on the 49ers for trusting him, but good on, you know, both of those guys for, you know, having the confidence in themselves. You go out and you do it. And I think both of them have had plenty of early season success to where, you know, certainly they're hungry guys and they want to get better, but they certainly have the confidence at this point that, all right, I belong here. I know I belong here. Let's continue to progress forward, as opposed to, you know, having those, you know, maybe early season, you know, confidence issues that maybe some rookies go through. I mean, those guys have been pretty strong day one.
Yeah, and I was expecting them to hit the wall at some point here, but they just keep plugging away. We got Joe Fan, 49er.com, senior reporter, with us. Two quick more questions. The first one, how's Reuben Foster doing? Are we going to see a return this season? Are they going to have to clean something up in the offseason? Where is he at with his injury?
I'm not sure where it's at, where it's going to be in the offseason, but Kyle Shanahan said he did expect to see, I think it was, what, Jaquaski, Pierre and Reuben all back at practice on Monday. So, you know, for me, I would expect that, you know, they're going to be back at least in a limited capacity next week. So whether that means Reuben's playing next Sunday against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, or if it's the following week against the Seattle Seahawks, I would expect him back at some point
Okay. Over
the next couple of weeks. I think Kyle Shanahan's about as honest as they come in terms of head coaches when discussing injuries. I mean, I think he divulges far more than he needs to, and it's fantastic for everybody. Kind of gives clarity on where things are at. And at no point has he sounded like Reuben Foster's season is in danger. I mean, they're going to be careful with him, but it doesn't sound like he's. I guess I'll put it this way: if they thought he was going to be done for the year, they probably would have already put him on IR.
So okay,
I expect him back sooner rather than later.
That's good. Joe Fan, 49ers.com senior reporter. One last question here: Nick Mullins, CJ Beathard. A lot of people are going back and forth on these two guys. I think, you know, it's a coin toss. I think Mullins looked really good at times. I know CJ, man, he's super tough. And there's something to be said for that. But how do you think they're going to play their hand moving forward? Are they just going to go with week to week? Do you think that one of these guys has the edge on the other moving forward? How's Kyle Shanahan going to make that determination?
I mean, Kyle said Nick Mullins is the starter until I say otherwise. So, I mean, for me, I would expect to see Nick Mullins the rest of the way until, you know, unless things go really south. But at this point, he's had two games, one of which being one of the best starts in NFL history for any quarterback making his debut. And then against New York, plenty of things that went wrong. But I saw a guy who bounced back really well. I mean, he threw an early pick, and the Giants scored an immediate touchdown. And you follow that up with a touchdown drive of your own and retake the lead. And so, you know, I think he's been really solid. I think there's You know, it doesn't seem like I've ever seen a play where, oh man, you know, he looks rattled. He looks uncomfortable. I mean, even down that last, you know, possession of the game, under a minute left, you got one timeout, and, you know, Nick Mullen gets into a situation where they have 1 second left and a shot at the end zone. It didn't work out, obviously, but, you know, I think that's a big moment where you got a lot of things you're juggling in terms of, you know, one, trying to execute, two, keeping the clock in the back of your mind. You get everyone to the line of scrimmage, spike the ball real quick at the second left. I mean, that's pretty impressive. And so I think there's a lot to take away from that. I think at no point have I seen anything of like, man, this guy's in over his head. So until you have any sort of that feeling, I would expect to see Nick Mullens remain under center.
I love it. Joe Fan, 49ers.com. I'm up against it, Joe. Hey, if I don't talk with you, I want to say honestly, thank you for coming on every week. I do consider you a friend. All right, buddy. I got to hook up with you down at the stadium. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. Stay safe. Stay out of this smoke. And let's keep in touch. All right.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving to you, man. I appreciate you. Enjoy the holiday. All right.
You too, buddy. Joe Fan, 49ers.com. Another fantastic, fantastic interview. I mean, look, this season hasn't been great, but there are some awesome positive things that we can pluck from this. And we're going to continue to talk 49ers because it's not all cherry. I've obviously, the record is not very good, but I'm feeling it. On the other side, Butcher Shop, 957, The Game!
Now back to The Butcher Shop on 957, The Game. Here's Joe Shasky.
Ah, yes, yes, yes. The Butcher Shop. Coming up at 10 o'clock, we're going to have Tommy Call. He writes here at 95.7 The Game. Got a little draft talk. A little fantasy football. I know the NFL football for our teams kind of stinks, but people are coming up on playoff positioning in fantasy, and I do want to talk a little fantasy football because everybody loves a little fantasy. But I want to get back into the 49ers. And by the way, loving the beats tonight. Rapid Forte, Players Club, San Francisco Classic. I think it's in the top three or four all-time Bay Area greatest songs. We were talking about the 49ers last segment, and we've been just warriored out. I know the warrior stuff, people are just so sick of the drama and blah, 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 blah. KD and Draymond, oh my God. But my Niners, man, my Niners, it's been a bad year. The Jimmy G injury is irrelevant to me because I don't think this team was going to get to the playoffs. I said all during the offseason, this is still a bottom five roster. I thought Jimmy was good enough to offset a lot of the flaws and deficiencies to where they could be 9-7. Maybe the ball bounces in their direction, guys ball out 10-6. But you heard me all offseason. I kept saying, man, dude, I'm just bottom five roster. And this bottom five roster has developed a couple of really good players. First off, a veteran that they signed who has been better than even I anticipated because I didn't know how he was going to come back from this injury is Richard Sherman. And I want to pause on Richard for a second because here's a guy who I hated, absolutely hated when he was a Seahawk. Ripped my heart out. That NFC Championship game, the way it went down, what he did afterwards, I mean, just like, ugh. But going to the games, watching him on the field, watching him in between the snaps, watching him communicate to the younger players, watching his demeanor in the press conferences, I was worried that Richard, when Jimmy went down, he started losing, would either shut it down physically because he looked hurt early in the year, maybe get frustrated, maybe lash out. I sold him short. And Richard Sherman, I want to see him be a Niner for a long time. I really like what he brings. On the field, he's an unbelievable stand-up communicator on a team that has no communicators. And you need to communicate on defense, especially pre-snap. Very important, especially in the secondary. Communicate coverages, communicate switch-offs, roll-offs, things like that. He's a phenomenal open field tackler. He made a tackle on Saquon Barkley up in his chest that was just, oh. I mean, not many cornerbacks have tackled in the open field the way Richard Sherman has throughout his career, and he continues to do so. In coverage, I think on triple and double moves, he can easily be beat. But that you can say that for a lot of cornerbacks in the league right now. I mean, Patrick Peterson has all his physical abilities, agilities, etc., and he still gets burned on the double, triple moves. Marcus Peters, too. But Richard still has it. And if the play is in front of him and he keeps his butt to the sideline and he can keep an eye on that quarterback, he's as good as anyone, especially on anticipating where the ball is going to go on those short in routes, the quick slants, the quick hitting crossing routes. And then on a team with no pass rush, that's another thing. Somebody on the text line brought this up, and I totally agree with them. There's this new like thing when we're talking about football. It's like, just disregard everything because they have no offensive line and no pass rush. Whoa. Like, not a lot of teams do. Not a lot of teams have elite pass rush. Does Kansas City have an elite pass rush? I mean, would you even say that their offensive line is elite? I don't know. I think they have elite skill players. I think Tyreek Hill is unbelievably unguardable. I think Travis Kelce is ridiculous. I think Patrick Mahomes is ridiculous. I think Andy Reid's a great play caller. But I don't know necessarily if they have pass rush. So like when I hear people say, well, you just can't judge anything the Niners are doing because they have no pass rush. Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can. You totally can. That's fair. You know, and it's just, I don't know. I just feel like it's an easy narrative for people to continue to spew out when they can't dissect other nuances of the game. For example, one of their free agent signings from the year prior was Malcolm Smith. Malcolm Smith, he sucks. And I know that's a word, like everyone's like, oh, not that good, you're going to say sucks. He sucks. Malcolm Smith sucks. He sucked in Seattle. That's why they let him go. He had one great play where he was in no man's land and Richard Sherman batted the ball back to him and he made the play of his life. It's the only play he's made in the NFL ever, ever. Show me a Malcolm Smith YouTube highlight page. There isn't one. There is not one. You know why? Because he's never healthy to make plays. Didn't play at all last year. And then finally this year he suits up and he's been abysmal. Oh, he's a leader. He knows the system. No, Malcolm Smith is trash. I would rather see Elijah Lee play all day, and I want to see what I have in him, than see Malcolm Smith play. There is a play in the game in the fourth quarter. It's third and forever with like 3 minutes to go. Third and forever with like a minute and a half and 2 minutes to go. Eli Manning drops back, and before Saquon Barkley could even get past the line on a little out route for a running back, just a little quick little hitter, Malcolm Smith just grabbed him. Why? It was the stupidest, least veteran, least smart play I've ever seen from a guy who's supposed to be, oh, we paid him for his brain and his smarts. That dude stinks. I don't want to see him back with the Niners next year. I think they should move off him already. I understand why they haven't. That guy sucks. I don't want to see him anymore. I want to see Elijah Lee. I love Fred Warner. Love what I see from him. Okello Witherspoon, and we're going to get into it with Tommy Call here at the top of the hour. I feel like it's the curious case of Okello. I really do. Because I want to love what he's doing, and then he just does some bonehead stuff. He plays really good for a stretch, and then it's like 4 or 5 consecutive plays of just bonehead moves. He never can locate where the ball is. He never understands where the back safety help is, to where he kind of funnels his receiver in a certain direction. It's just frustrating. And on the Chilton Auto Body text line from the 925, and I will allow people to come in with this, ha! Jimmy joke of a franchise QB. Future of the franchise in all capital. That's like one of my tweets, all capitals. With the 9-8 touchdown ratio and averaging over 5 yards an attempt, bottom of the barrel. Bottom of the barrel, Jimmy Garoppolo. Okay. Heck of a tweet, bro. Heck of a text. Gotcha. Thanks for listening. Dog, if you can't tell that Jimmy G is so much, he is light years better than Nick Mullins, CJ Beathard. Like, it's so obvious. Does he throw picks? Yeah, he does throw picks. You know who else threw like 300 picks? Brett Favre. And I'm not saying he's Brett Favre. I'm just saying, like, touchdown to interception ratio, there's much better There's much better, more deep, nuanced analytics that you can research and come at me than with a touchdown to interception ratio. Like, come on, dude. It's like saying, oh, Jeff Samardzija's win-loss record is really good. No, I don't care about that. Just watch the teams play. Watch the quarterback play in the pocket. There's much more nuance to it. Now let's get legal. You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, the radio home of the Golden State Warriors. All right, let's get into Tommy Call. We got him? Oh, yeah. From 95.7 The Game, we have a young, aspiring writer from the North Bay, and his name is Tommy Call. Tommy Call, how are you doing on this beautiful Friday, Fireball Friday for Chris Townsend?
Well, Butch, I got to say, I'm actually a little bit bummed out because I would hope that you could do the rest of the interview in that voice that you just did, the legal ID there. I really love it. Can we continue that?
Can you wait one second? Can you wait one second? Because I would like to introduce Lucas Alexander. Welcome aboard, buddy. How you doing?
I don't really know what took you so long to introduce me, but I'm here.
My bad. I'm here. My bad. I'm a solo artist.
That's okay.
That's okay. That's all right. Tommy Call, we got you on the line. We've got Lucas Alexander in studio with me. We're going to have fun this last hour. All the Warrior fans are miserable right now, Tommy. I need something positive to look forward to.
I have a question for you. You're going to ask Tommy all these draft Niner questions.
Yeah.
In between, Tommy's a fantasy expert.
Yes.
Can I interject fantasy questions in between?
Love it.
Is that
cool? All right, let's get draft first.
Get ready, Tom.
And bring the heat, Lucas, okay? We're going to have fun here. This is draft fantasy hot takes back and forth. Okay, we're going to move quick, people, all right? This is why this is hilarious.
Athletic show for athletic people. Here we go.
And by the way, the 925, the Chilton Auto Body text line, your text line voice is hilarious. Thank you. Thank you.
I love it.
I've
been working.
All right, Tommy Call. The 49ers might have the 2 pick in the draft, but the Raiders are looking like they are going to have the number 1 overall pick. Who should the Oakland Raiders be targeting in the 2018-2019 NFL draft?
I almost think at this point it's already decided that it's going to be Nick Bosa. I mean, it's pretty easy to look at how bad they need an edge rusher. I mean, you don't need anybody to really talk about it. I mean, we obviously all